Penguin Random House Audio presents Economic Dignity by Gene Sperling. Read for you by Holter Graham. Introduction. In the fall of 2009, it was not unusual for me to get a call from a congressman or senator wanting to complain about President Barack Obama's economic policy. I was doing a stint as a senior counselor to the Secretary of the Treasury, part of the special firefighting team brought in during the worst of the financial crisis. As I had previously been President Bill Clinton's White House National Economic Advisor and had worked in the West Wing every day of his 8 years, many members of Congress knew me well, certainly well enough to feel comfortable complaining. One call that fall got right to the point. "Gene, a few of us were talking, and we were hoping you could help convince President Obama that he should be focusing only on the economy, not health care." The congressman was not claiming that President Obama had not thrown his heart and soul into saving the economy from the most devastating financial crisis since the Great Depression. Clearly, he had. Nor was he asking for a dramatic second stimulus plan. This member of Congress, like many others, was already petrified about a political backlash over the false notion that too much had already been spent. What he wanted was better optics. He wanted President Obama to demonstrate that he was focused solely on the economy, to use President Clinton's famous line, like a laser beam. And that meant that he should stop talking about his fight for universal health care and talk only about jobs and growth. At one level, this was just another call you get in the government that makes you want to scream in frustration. But there was something else that struck me more deeply. The unexamined assumption that guaranteeing health care security for every American was somehow not about the economy. In the over 2 decades since I started my policy career on the 1988 presidential campaign of Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis, I had been privileged to be on the field, or at least in a good box seat, for most of our national economic policy debate. I had been blessed to work for leaders truly committed to economic justice, from Mario Cuomo to Bill Clinton to Barack Obama. Yet I had also come to see that even for well-meaning policymakers, it was too easy to take your eye off the ball, to start confusing means and ends. Economic conventions and the day-to-day battles of politics can lead anyone to focus too much on particular economic metrics and political strategies, and too little on how economic policy ultimately affects the happiness and sense of meaning and fulfillment in people's lives. Of course, no one means to lose their focus. And yet, we can become too attached to certain policy designs, ideological tribes, or message frames, as if they were ends in themselves. People on all sides dig in to defend specific positions without remembering that their favored metrics or policy mechanisms are means to the ultimate end goals of lifting up people's lives, and should be evaluated and reevaluated based on their effectiveness in light of changing economic, technological, and political trends. I personally have never related to any of the labels or policy camps that others have assigned to me over the years. It's easy to be accused of being a technocrat without conviction if you confess to being open to any policy or strategy that would work to enhance what matters most in the lives of the most people possible. Why should this be so? Why shouldn't our economic convictions and philosophies be centered on our end goals for lifting up all people, as opposed to fixed strategies for getting there? When we go to doctors for a serious matter, we want their end goal to be the promotion of our good health, not their commitment to a particular medicine or a defense of past prescriptions when they have better evidence of what now works best. Keeping a clear eye on that ultimate end goal is also crucial for knowing what to prioritize when you are making policy. It requires not just knowing what is right but what you feel will matter most in lifting up the lives of people you are there to serve. Too often, decisions about prioritization end up being compelled by the congressional calendar, polling, or current policy fads, without a deep and reflective consideration of what will be most meaningful in lifting up lives. My way of clearing my head and avoiding this trap has always been to step away and ask a simple question. When someone is on their deathbed and looks back on all their years, what would they say mattered most in their economic life? What would make them feel pride and satisfaction instead of despair or frustration? Those questions might not help determine the precise level of corporate taxation or what specific jobs program to favor, but it forces us to ask ourselves, what economic policies will matter most at a human level? Nobody on their deathbed is going to say that what mattered most to them was the deficit or spending as a percentage of gross domestic product, GDP. Instead, they will be thinking about how well they were able to care for their families, provide opportunity for their children, enjoy the best moments of family life, feel proud of their work, and enjoy camaraderie, autonomy, and respect in their jobs, and whether or not they had at least a fair shot to pursue their sense of ambition or purpose. These reflections made me think more and more about the questions of dignity at stake in our debates on healthcare policy. I found myself ruminating on the heartbreaking stories of parents with terribly ill children who couldn't provide the care they needed, or whose family was left in economic despair and even bankruptcy because of gaps in coverage, discrimination against pre-existing conditions, or arbitrary limits on care. Perhaps because I was in a time of life where I was growing my own family, these stories hit me particularly hard. I knew that efficiency and controlling costs were more conventional economic issues in healthcare. But as a human being, I could think only about what a devastating assault these situations were on the very soul of these parents, on their dignity as human beings. They had done their part and worked hard their whole lives, and yet were unable to provide essential care when it was most needed for the children they loved more than life itself. While I had scores of economic ideas that I hoped to encourage future administrations to take on, I decided if there was ever a chance to permanently prevent these assaults on human dignity, it would be at the top of my list. In 2008, I was proud that those I advised, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, placed universal health care at the heart of their campaigns, and that Obama stayed with it as president, even when polling and political considerations might have suggested otherwise. I took enormous pride in the endless hours I spent leading the Treasury team on its part of the Affordable Care Act, ACA. And yet, after this whole personal journey, there I was holding a phone, listening to this congressman tell me that healthcare security did not even make the cut as an economic issue. That phone call solidified for me that the need for greater clarity on the ultimate goal of economic policy was not just about personal reflection. It mattered for real-world policy. When policymakers come to see the economy as distinct from what matters most to human fulfillment and dignity in people's economic lives, there's a problem. It impacts what gets prioritized or even recognized as a vital economic issue. In this case, it meant members of Congress believing that messaging on economic growth was a more important economic priority than ensuring that tens of millions of working Americans would not experience the heartbreak and loss of economic dignity that comes from not being able to provide health care for their loved ones. Today, we are in a moment of major reexamination of how well our existing model for modern capitalism is serving the majority of working people. Can it create paths out of poverty and reverse accelerating economic inequality?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?